Hi, everyone. I'm Jen. I'm an alcoholic. Yes, 10/24/20. I celebrated, or last Thursday, I celebrated 4 years. Thank you. Something that's really important to me, like when I share my sober date, is I like to tell people like what I've done with those 4 years, not just a, hey, I've been sober. And I found someone to work with who thinks the same way I do. You know, I tend to struggle with the big things by myself. And my sponsor is teaching me that I don't have to do that. And that's something different that I haven't done in the previous years of my sobriety. So it gives me great honor to introduce our speaker tonight, Nikki.
Hi, I'm Nikki. I'm an alcoholic. Don't touch that. I'm really sick. No, seriously, so don't touch me after the meeting. I don't know how to do this, Lloyd. Count me. Thank you. Okay. So, because I'm so sick, I'm just kind of, like, aloof. I really don't even care that, like, there's no nerves here. I'm just kind of a zombie here, so bear with me. I said my name right. My sobriety date is 12/12/16. My home group is the fourth dimension. I have 15 minutes. You're an asshole. Is that real? Okay. I said asshole from the podium. That'll be the last time. Sorry. I'm really trying to work on that. I was like one of the first things my sponsor ever told me was, you really just muddy the message with your language. And I was like, I don't know about that being the truth, but she's pushed me to change in ways I never thought I could or should. So sponsoring Jen has been humbling. And I used to hear people say that a lot in AA, that sponsoring others humbled them, and it really did the opposite for me for a long time. It really just like inflated my ego that I had a lot of girls that I sponsored that looked to me for their answers, which wasn't really the truth. And you know, the truth is that really I'm just like a witness, an up close and personal witness to how God changes these girls' lives. And and I'm honored, you know, to be close to that and walk this deal with her. And if you've ever moved in sobriety, please, please, please get with Jen. It is so hard to move with time, to discard old ideas about how it should be. And she's really willingly, like, opened her mind to Florida in general. You know, and when you're from the Northeast, we really do it all wrong comparatively. And so please get with her. And she forces me to want to do more in Alcoholics Anonymous. And her and Blair really kind of catapulted my sponsorship relationships. I went through a period of almost a year without actively sponsoring anyone. And I had to be really inventive with how I was helpful here. And my ego really hurt with that idea that I wasn't anybody's sponsor, and I deemed I could not stay close to Alcoholics Anonymous or God without it, and I learned that that wasn't the truth, and I found ways to be helpful and purposeful here without it. And a lot of the reason for that was because I needed to show up for my family, with my children who were so young, and that doesn't appeal to me. I'd rather be here with, like, sick alcoholics than a screaming toddler. But my sponsor has forced me to really be involved, you know, with the things that God has given me that I never wanted. So there's so many people in this room that I love that watched me get sober, that I've watched get sober. And this group is really special. And this group and Fourth Dimension are my favorite meetings in the whole world. And if you don't believe your home group is the best meeting in the world, you need a new one. This is my address in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you ever need me, all you need to do is come to Fourth Dimension on Fridays at 7 o'clock and I'll be there. There have been times that I've showed up and had to sleep in the car, but I'm there. Because I'm sick. And I pre-COVID, this really probably wouldn't have been a big deal for me to show up here with a really bad cold. I can respect the fact that post-COVID, that's a really big deal. So I understand. Terry said, just don't go anywhere near him. And I'm not gonna. So my story, I guess I should probably tell that. I come from alcoholism. My parents are both alcoholic. They're really crazy. They stopped going to AA early on, and they just kind of had untreated alcoholism from my time in childhood. And they were angry. And my mom divorced from my father early, and she was just really disinterested in being a mom. And today I really have that innate following, and I have to work really, really hard to not be that way. As a mom, I have to work really hard to want to be a parent. And I used to resent her for it for a long time. And I think through the process of amends and prayer, that has changed. I took my first drink when I was 13 or so. It was Bacardi Silver straight. It's awful. I vomited. I took my clothes off. I kissed girls and boys. And I did things that probably anybody would do drunk. But I remember a distinct feeling that I was free for the first time. And I've always suffered from severe anxiety. In my opinion, like free-floating anxiety really didn't come from anywhere. And alcohol and drugs really eliminated that. And it made me feel one with the world and a part of who you were and that I belonged. And without it, I was over there. And you knew what you were doing. And you knew what to say. And I didn't. And I just felt so different from other people. And I really isolated when I was sober. And I heard somewhere in Alcoholics Anonymous that, you know, my problem isn't alcohol. My problem is sobriety. That when I'm sober, it's unbearable. And alcohol was the way it became bearable. So with my parents, you know, and their journey with Alcoholics Anonymous, I really didn't want to end up here. So I did everything within my power not to overshoot the mark. Pretty much what that looked like was just don't do heroin. And I did everything else, but I knew if I did that, it would be a, you know, I wouldn't be able to come back from that. But it didn't matter. You know, I have alcoholism, the disease of more. And I ended up in my first meeting at 18. And my brother was the one that brought me here. He had about 2 years sober, and we went to 3333. At the time, there was this guy that dressed in a toga and sat on the floor. He didn't believe in chairs. And I just kind of looked at my brother, and he was just like, welcome to AA, you know. And, you know, I immediately decided that this was just silly, and I was making a mountain out of a molehill, and I went back to drinking. But it didn't last long, and the seed had been planted that, you know, I don't remember what was said, but I know that I came away from that first meeting different, that I would never be able to unsee what was then in my mind a problem with my drinking. And there were just so many times that were getting closer and closer that I wanted to stop and found I could not. And I was really miserable. I got to the place where we all get, where at the end of the road, where we die or get sober. And I was either going to die by my own hand or just crash my car into something, you know, like that's really where I was at in the end. And I kept coming to AA, I kept relapsing. I really wouldn't call it relapsing. I wasn't doing anything here except occupying a chair, but I would just come and drink and come and drink. And I mean, what a sad state, you know, to just only come to Alcoholics Anonymous drunk. And I would come here drunk and lie and say that I had 9 days or whatever, and I didn't. And this one girl that I hated in Alcoholics Anonymous, I had come here enough to hate people, and I had pinned out, you know, who I needed to stay away from early on, and it was mostly, like, the people that had it together, pretty, well-dressed, didn't curse, boyfriends they didn't cheat on, you know, those were not my people. And she approached me at a meeting and told me that I couldn't stay sober and that I wouldn't stay sober until I got a relationship with God. And I had no idea what she meant. And she told me that God is inside of me and that I had access to it, whether I knew it consciously or not. And she encouraged me to pray on my knees every day for at minimum 30 days. And if it didn't work, then I could go back. And she told me to just very simply pray for God to keep me sober and thank him at the end of the night. That has since developed, but that was my start. And I got sober, and it was July 27th of 09, and I had just turned 19. I had not had a legal drink. I had a lot of reasons why this was probably not going to be a lifelong deal for me. Y'all said one day at a time, but I knew you meant the rest of my life. And I just wasn't really on board for that. So again, I was encouraged to keep this thing one day at a time. And I got really plugged in. You know, this group in particular, they don't really let you get away with anything. Or at least they didn't then. I don't know. I haven't been here in quite some time. But I'm sure it's very similar. And I would, like, buy something for myself and show it off. And they'd be like, do you owe financial amends? I was like, excuse you. Like, I'm excited. Why are you trying to rain on my parade? And what they were trying to instill in me is that I can't just go around buying things with other people's money because I still owed the world, you know? And I didn't pay the world back from 2009 up until maybe 6 months ago. So it's been a journey. It's been like 10 or 15 years to really make restitution for harms done financially and in other areas. I was really just kind of a mess the first 5 years. And on the outside, I mean, I had sponsees. I had a home group I was committed to. I carried out various service positions on service committees and just kind of sprinkled my character defects all over people. There wasn't a whole lot of 6 and 7. It was pretty much like, I have alcoholism, there is hope here, and let me tell you about it. All that other stuff was just filler, you know. And conceptually, I understood that, like, this was kind of about a God, and this was kind of about owning your part. And I didn't do anything about it. I learned early on how to take inventory. I love to talk about myself. So self-obsession really became the motivation to take inventory. And they were willing to listen to it, you know. So I would tell my sponsor this inventory she had me do on a daily basis. And she would probably instruct me what to do with that. You know, take it into morning meditation, take it into prayer. I don't recall doing any of that ever for the first 7 years. I thought people that talked about meditation in meetings were liars. It says in our 11th step that this is about prayer and meditation. I disregarded the word meditation for 10 years. Lo and behold, this is about meditation. It doesn't say or, it says and. And that has changed my life. I wouldn't stop meditating for $1 million today. So... a really long story short, I really aggravated everyone in my life. I walked out on this home group. I told Terry to drink. And I really just walked away from what saved my life. And I didn't walk away from AA. I just walked away from you people. You know, I started my own group. I moved away. I needed other people around me that didn't know who I was because I was just such a wreck. And I had made so much damage in AA that I deemed it was irreparable. And really, through the process of amends, it probably would have been okay. But I had no faith in that, and I had no experience with that. So I moved to New Jersey with a boyfriend, and shortly before that, I had gotten pregnant and decided to have an abortion. And I was 24 years old, and I was 5 years sober, and I thought I was making the right decision, and I woke up in the morning really regretful and remorseful about it. And it was kind of the beginning of the end, and the beginning of me stuffing and not dealing and not applying the steps in my life and self-pity, self-obsession, knowing the tools of the program, spitting the tools of the program out of my mouth, but not following it. When I went to New Jersey, I did the same thing I did here. I isolated myself. I weaponized the information here. I told people where they were doing it wrong as a means to save Alcoholics Anonymous from them, to see it carry through for the next alcoholic. I mean, my motives were good. You know, and I really loved Alcoholics Anonymous, and that was kind of the scary part, you know, because I wasn't acting like it. I ended up leaving that boyfriend because I beat up his mom, and I don't know that I left. I mean, it was kind of like just a division, you know, and I wouldn't come home. I did not want to come back to Florida. I really judged people that would leave the state. It would not work, and they would come back, so I didn't want to be one of those. Come back. I went to jail 6.5 years sober for domestic violence. That was like my fifth battery in AA. Along the way, I started stealing in sobriety. I was like taking other people's credit cards, running Craigslist scams. You people talked about ways in which you were creative to keep the money flowing when you were getting drunk. So I took that into practice. I mean, you get what you want to get here. I told a lot of people that I was pregnant when I wasn't and needed an abortion and that they would give me money for it. And a few months ago, I went back to New Jersey, and one of the biggest amends I made was to a guy that I told that to. And when I told him that I was pregnant and that I needed to have an abortion, he relapsed because he was so upset about it. And he's back, and he had like 10 years sober. And he said, you know, I never knew the truth, and I'm so glad that you came here to tell me. And I gave him $500 and told him that I'm never allowed to say the words I'm pregnant again unless I'm actually pregnant. And that was my amends to society. And I'm so free. Like, I'm not that girl. I'm not that girl anymore. And I would never use that as a solution today. I honestly feel like I talk about somebody else when I mention that stuff. Because I can't even imagine acting that way, but I know I did. You know, and I never want to forget what I can become again. So I was doing all this crazy crap sober, and I was the last one to see it coming, but I obviously relapsed, and I had just celebrated like 7 years at my home group. I told them all how to do it, and I had a black eye at the time from a assault I lost. you know, so I'm really just a really great example of 7 years sober. And honestly, 7 years sober for most people is super hard. I know a lot of people that get Baker acted around that time. I almost got Baker acted last weekend. So I'm coming up on 8, you know, so it's hard. you can get with me after if you want to know more about that. So I relapsed in 2016. I ended up posting like a lot of really sad, pathetic things on Facebook. People started to figure out what was going on. It was very clear that something was very wrong. And a woman that I had previously sponsored, named Lauren, in 2013, figured out a way to get me home. And it was basically a coming full circle. You know, and they say, like, be nice to newcomers. They might sponsor you one day. Like, that became my truth. My boyfriend at the time's name was Jesse, and I accidentally called this Jesse in the midst of being messed up. And I was like, oh, hey, girl. You know? Hi. You know, like, what's up? It's so sad when all you have is Alcoholics Anonymous and you're drunk. And not that it's sad, like I feel sad for you. It's like, it's sad that like this was what my life had become. I felt so sorry for myself. But in a way, it was really the best thing in the world because it's all I had left. And my entire adult life was in AA. So I leaned back in to Tampa AA with the most humility I'd ever known. And I got sober again. And that was 12/12/16. And that woman, Lauren, put me up in her mother's house. And I lived in somebody's den for like the first 3 months. I had nothing. I had the clothes in my car that I could fit. And my car was out for repossession, so I was still hiding it. And I didn't have insurance. My license was suspended. I mean, my whole life was a wreck. And it did not take long for that to happen. You know, that was already starting to happen in sobriety. You know, and the drink was the last thing to happen. So a lot's happened in the last 7 years, you know, and I would love to tell you that, like, after what I just described, things got a lot better. But they didn't, and I came in here, that same girl, a little bit better, but not quite. I still really wanted a boyfriend. That was kind of like the biggest goal. If I got that, then everything else would be okay. And that's kind of the theme of my life. Like, once this happens, everything will be okay. Once I get through this week, once I get through this job, once I get, you know, whatever, fill in the blank. And I've learned today that, like, the only peace to be had is right now. And people said that all throughout my sobriety, and I was just like, yeah, okay. Like, good for you. I got stuff to worry about, you know. I need money. There's no peace right now, but there is today, and it's available to you whether you have 1 day or 100 years. So I met this guy. He was definitely the one, and I have experienced that 10 times, you know, he's the one, but he was the one, you know, and he was dreamy and wonderful. Beautiful eyes, lots of money, seemingly. I'm not sure if she actually had the money, but it seemed like he did. And he was a drinker. And I had never dated anyone that drank. I always dated you people and taught you how to run your program, you know. So this was a change of pace for me. And I fell in love with him very quickly. And I don't even know that I understood what love was. But anyway, he drank all the time, and within a month of being together, he had knocked the hinges off my door trying to get into my apartment. And I'm sitting outside filing a police report for felony burglary. And this cop looks at me and is like, how long have you guys been together? You know, I was like, a month. And he was like, you're gonna leave, right? And I was like, it was just a bad night, you know. He he was great, you know, except for that stuff. That happened probably 17 more times, not specifically that, but like different run-ins with the police, and bones were broken, concussions were had, trespassing, TROs. My roommate filed a TRO on me, which is hard to do. I lived with him, you know. And I was really, really scared. I want to be clear that this was a mutually abusive relationship. I was not like a battered woman. I was signing up for this every single day and participating in the violence. And he really, you know how some people bring out the best in you? He really brought out the worst in me. And I would show up in AA with slings on my arm, black eyes. I showed up to Ficky Paw at some level with like a black eye. And I'm like performing the bid skit. And this girl, Megan, who recently died, she like pulled me aside and she was just like, what can I do? Like, I need to help you. Like, I need you to get out of this relationship so you can survive. And so many people did that for me. And I wouldn't leave. You know, and it's because he was my drug. It's because he made everything okay. I couldn't breathe air without him. You know, and I'm just as capable of doing that with drugs and alcohol and with people and with money. And it was a complete obsession, you know. And I was like 2 years sober. You too can have all that if you do not have a relationship with a higher power. And I talk about this, and I have since been encountered with so many women that have been in abusive and toxic relationships and Alcoholics Anonymous that are going to die. And not just die because of the relationship, but die because they're going to drink. You know, and I think the only reason I didn't drink during that was because I was here. I was here a lot. And I ran to Alcoholics Anonymous every time he wouldn't answer the phone, which was a lot. And, you know, I was like the type of girl to call like 100 times in a row. So sick. When people do that to me today, I get really freaked out, and I finally understood why that is so anxiety ridden. So long story short, I went to jail, on like a final domestic battery with him. I was 10 weeks pregnant and determined to keep the baby. And I don't know if in part it was to keep him around, because that had never worked before. But I also couldn't deal with the loss again. I decided that this abortion I had had was so scarring that it didn't matter how dangerous this was going to be, I was going to carry it out. And this was March of 20. So COVID was just like right happening, like right then. And I was like one of the first people in labor and delivery in COVID. It was horrible. What I didn't know was that God was all up in this, you know, and everybody around me was like, don't have this baby. Don't have this baby. He's dangerous. You're going to be tied to him for the rest of your life. I'm like, I know, like, it's going to be great. I'm going to get him back. And what I didn't know was that he was already in a new relationship before I was even pregnant. And that woman saved my life. His now wife saved my life, because it finally shut the door on being able to go back to him. I mean, I was going to the Skyway Bridge. Like, I could not foresee a way out. And so when I had this baby, who's 4 and a half now, everything changed. Everything changed. And there was this guy, Bobby B., who talked about how he discovered God. And he talked about when he had a son. And I was like 19 when I heard this, so it just kind of glossed over me, you know. But today it became relative, you know. And he said, I had a son, and I remember looking at him and knowing that no matter what he did, no matter how deplorable behavior became, I was going to love him no matter what. And I got it. you know, and I got it. And that's what he said. And that's how he discovered that spiritual awakening. And that's what happened to me, you know. So I looked at this little boy who had no choice in the world, you know, and it was up to me to make these choices for him, to be a good mother and to give him everything I could. And for the first time, in sincerity, I started trying to have a relationship with God. And I really didn't have a lot of tools, you know, and it's not because people didn't give them to me. I just had no idea how to live a spiritual way of life. If you're curious, it's in 10 and 11. If you're curious how to connect with a higher power, it is through prayer and meditation. No matter your sincerity, no matter your words, no matter how many minutes you sit with your eyes closed, the attempts matter, and the attempts got me there. And so I started this prayer deal, and I just started praying in the morning and at night. And I started reading literature in the morning, and I started trying to fill my head with stuff outside of when I was here. And being here was, it was COVID. Like, good luck, you know? Like, I couldn't be here. And I felt scared. I think I was 5 years sober when this was going on. And I started holding house meetings. I just needed you people. I needed to be around you. I cannot go home and read the big book by myself. That's just not how it works here. I found my home group in the midst of that. My home group, the Fourth Dimension group, they never stopped meeting. They didn't even have masks on. They didn't care. Pasco County, man. And God bless him. I was like 10 weeks postpartum. The baby was like with me, and they asked me to speak, and I'm holding the baby. Somebody eventually took him away from me, and I'm speaking, and I finally find my people again, you know. And my God, this meeting like changed everything for me. I became the person I always wanted to become, in Alcoholics Anonymous. My sponsor told me when I got sober again this time that I wasn't allowed to speak in a business meeting for 2 years. That should speak to how toxic it was. And it was very... But I was approaching that 2 year mark when I, you know, I was like maybe 3 or 4 or 5 years sober when I found the Fourth Dimension. And the restraint that happened because I had taken that 2 year time was just a miracle. They do things so weird. They really do. They do things totally backwards from Tampa YPG, which is the basis of how we're supposed to do it in my mind, you know. If you don't do it like this group, you're wrong, like for sure. And especially if it's a speaker meeting. So anyway, they do all this stuff wrong, and I'm just letting them do it. You know, I'm letting them do it. What's happening is I'm watching this occur without disturbance. And what a peaceful gift. I started to truly understand the second tradition, which is that, like, if they're all cool with it, then I don't need to not be cool with it. You know, like, God is in the room, and when 2/3 majority is not met, you know, all this, like, jargon that I would just utilize and weaponize here. And, I mean, I'm grateful I have the knowledge of the traditions, but I didn't have the humility to carry it out, you know. And so finally, this stuff is starting to implement. And I believe fully that a lot of that was because I was practicing a spiritual way of life. And it was almost like this stuff was a byproduct. It wasn't the goal. I didn't wake up deciding, today I'm going to be a good member of a business meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was just, I learned how to pause. I learned how to stop talking. Which is so hard, you know, for somebody like me who needs to tell you. I know you need to know. We'd all be happy if you just did it this way, you know, and we all suffer from that. 2 or 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago, I had another baby. He's 2.5. And during that pregnancy, the guy that I was with at the time relapsed. And I was like 2 months pregnant. He was like 2 years sober and he drank. And I was like, God, what are you doing? I don't want to be a single mom again. This was supposed to be my way forward, you know, with this guy. And he was a really great guy. He has alcoholism, you know, and he drank again. And the reasons behind it, like, really became secondary to what my course was going to be. And, you know, the old me, the unspiritual me, and it's not even the old me, it's the me without a God, would have decided that that was a moment of chaos and insanity, and this is never going to work, and, you know, all of this hysteria. And all I did during that time was lean into you and listen to what you told me to do, because I couldn't hear God. I was so afraid. You know, when I'm fearful, when I'm resentful, when I'm dishonest, I can't hear and feel God. I'm blocked. You know, so that's when the fellowship comes in. That's when sponsorship comes in, so I can hear God again. And I was told to do some writing, and I was told to do this, like, little circle Venn diagram of, like, with him, without him, with the baby, with the, I mean, it was a mess. But whatever, I'm taking the suggestions because I don't know what to do. And everything that came back from all of this writing and all of this praying was do nothing. Right? Long story short, that's what ended up becoming the answer, was do nothing. I'm not a do nothing type person. I really need to do something about it, if not everything about it, especially when my life is in jeopardy and or my future. And I did nothing. And what transpired was not because of me, and I didn't do it. And it is my inclination that when people I love relapse, is I move them in, I strap them down, I make them have the sponsor I pick, or I write their four step. Like, I literally will do anything to a fault for the people I love here. And good motives. And every time I got them out of my clutches, they drank. You know, so I'm not really yielding a lot of results with that stuff. And I finally saw, like, that for its truth. You know, that I couldn't just move him in and strap him down. Like, that wasn't going to be the answer. So I did nothing. And eventually he got sober. It's weird. And it wasn't my fault. You know, it wasn't my doing. And it was hard. It was hard to come back from that. I had a lot of trauma in the sense that, like, he was going to relapse again at any moment. It took probably a year and a half for me to stop believing that every time he missed a meeting, he was going to drink. What a life. I ended up starting to go to Al-Anon, you know, and it wasn't so much about, like, get an Al-Anon sponsor and do the steps again. It was like, just fill my head with this idea that, like, this isn't my job. This is my hula hoop. I really hate that. But, like, this is my responsibility, and that's his. You know, so I got to hear that kind of language. And for the most part, I could not butt out. And I really made this guy and his life a living hell. Because I was afraid. So he got sober again, whatever. We ended up getting back together. My son was born. And 3 months later, I got Baker-acted, or 2 months later, I got Baker-acted. And it was, like, really had to do with postpartum stuff. And for the first time in my life, I've been Baker-acted a bunch of times, but for the first time in my life, I was Baker-acted sober with the willingness to do what they said. I'm usually the girl in the psych ward that is screaming, hitting, in the quiet room, being injected with something to calm me down, you know, that girl. And that just wasn't me this time, and I listened, and I took instruction, you know, and I got to leave in the appropriate amount of time. They didn't keep me for 7 extra days, you know, or whatever, and I came out of there with a new sponsor, and it was weird, and it was scary, and I didn't want to do it. And if you've ever switched sponsors with time, it is so scary. You feel like your foundation is being ripped out from under you, and I just heard this lady speak, and she just radiated, and I tried to ignore it for a time, and I didn't really want anything to do with change, and it just kind of became involuntary, and I ended up asking this lady, Suzanne, to sponsor me. And if you ever see her, you'll know, because she radiates, and she's intimidating. But she had me rework the steps right after I got out of the psych ward. I mean, we wasted no time, and she made me read the book and see the book in a way that I had never heard it before. And this girl, Bree, was texting me a couple weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, and she was like, the big book comes to life when I'm ready to hear it. And that was so true. That's exactly what was going on. It was like, for the first time, I was ready to receive what I was reading in part. And, you know, this information has been flying around my head for 14 years. I had very little understanding of how to apply it. And so this new relationship with a higher power that I'd already started trying to have got catapulted into the fourth dimension. Which I hated when people said that, you know, like, okay, good for you. I bet you levitate, you know. And I don't think I levitate. And I really mess up a lot. But I have a very deep solution to self, to me, to my character defects, to what I struggle with. And what I inventory. We all, like most of us in here, if you've worked 1 through 4, you know how to write down where you suck, right? Like, I suck in this area. And it's usually repetitive. It's usually the same stuff with different faces. And the thing is, though, if you don't do anything about it, you just keep sucking and you keep getting worse. And I overextend and overextend myself and push and push until I get my way and I make things worse. You know, that's everyone with alcoholism and in life, what we do if we're afraid. And so I've learned to combat this. And I was just recently, maybe last week, telling my sponsor that I have all this anxiety. I always have anxiety. I really think my case is different with anxiety, although it turns out most people in Alcoholics Anonymous have anxiety, but my anxiety is different. And I'm telling this to my sponsor. And you know, she's said this before. She has said, you know, this big God has cured you of alcoholism. You no longer need to take a drink every day. You don't struggle with it. What makes you think he's not powerful enough to solve this? I'm like, it's different. It's in a different box. And she encouraged me to pray, set a timer on my phone every 30 minutes to thank God for removing my anxiety. I'm like, he didn't though. And that's what I was told to do. And I don't have anxiety. I don't not ever have anxiety. But I'm freer. I'm freer. And that's the goal. A little bit more free. A little bit more free. And I don't think I'm ever done. You know, I know that like a year from now or 5 years from now, I'll have the life that I never dreamed possible. But, you know, the truth is that, like, I'm a mom today of a 2- and a 4-year-old, and nobody would have trusted me with their houseplant 5 years ago. Seriously. If I was told to water your plants, it would just never would have happened. They would have died before you came back. And these kids are alive. They are. And they are mostly healthy. They have the flu right now. But I'm a good mom. I'm a good mom, and it took me 2 years of being a mom to be able to say that with confidence and understand that, like, it's okay to be a good mom and think that and know that and live that. And that's happened in all areas of my life. I'm a good AA. You know, I show up when I'm sick, even though people are afraid. I was taught what to do here in my life. And the other hours of the day that I'm not here, apparently, is when it matters. You know, I can't just come here, pick up your chair, pick up your trash, and consider myself a good AA, which is what I did for a long time. I can't cheat on my boyfriend and be a good AA. I cannot steal your credit card and be a good AA. You know, and I will never be able to repay the world or Alcoholics Anonymous for the life I have and the amends I've been able to make and the people I've been able to be surrounded by. But I'm going to keep trying. I'm going to keep trying, you know, no matter what it costs. And I don't know. I love you, Jen. I love you, Blair. You guys are great. And you really have helped me more than you could ever know in the last couple of months. I mean, Blair has the same life I do. She has a 2- and a 4-year-old and a husband she hates. I have the same life. I mean, there's love. I mean, hate and love are close. But it's been so amazing to watch someone live the life I live and be able to talk somebody through it. And God gives us exactly what we need with these sponsees, man. Like, if I just show up and say I'm available, God gives me what I need. So that's it. Thank you.